is Thursday, January 31st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up...
I was just going to my OBGYN for my annual, and I didn't go because I had symptoms or I felt bad or I had any indication. I just went, like I said, to go get my checkup, and that's how I found out.
Also ahead, U.S. President Donald Trump reinforces his strong support for efforts to restore democracy in Venezuela, and the French government says it may soon repatriate French jihadists held in Syria. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said yesterday he was dispatching a team to make preparations for the next summit between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. VOA's Steve Miller has more from Seoul.
In an interview on the U.S. cable network Fox News Channel, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the North Koreans had agreed the second summit between the two leaders would be held at the end of February.
That's the plan. That's what the North Koreans have now agreed to. It's what we've agreed to with them as well. We'll do it someplace in Asia.
Pompeo did not name the summit venue, but many suspect the meeting will take place in Vietnam. A summit between Trump and Kim last June in Singapore produced a vague commitment by Kim to work toward the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Steve Miller, VOA News, Seoul.
Thank you, Steve. Perpetrators of deadly church bombings in the Philippines Sunday are believed to be protesting against a new Muslim autonomous region that so far excludes leaders in an outlying island group near the blast site. Two bomb blasts killed 20 people and injured 111 Sunday at a church in Jolo, the major city in Sulu province. The local Islamic State-backed Muslim rebel group Abu Sayyaf took credit for the bombings, which came 6 days after voters in Sulu bucked a trend in much of the Philippine South. They voted against a law that will create the country's strongest ever Muslim autonomous region. Among the top stories in the world, U.S. President Donald Trump voices new determination today to build a wall along the southern border with Mexico, saying it would get done one way or the other, even if lawmakers don't give him the money to construct it. Malaysia's new king formally assumes the throne during a coronation ceremony today in the Southeast Asian country. U.S. President Donald Trump meets with Chinese Vice Premier Liu He at the White House today, the last day of a second round of negotiations aimed at resolving the ongoing trade war between the economic powers. And in the last 4 weeks alone, no fewer than five African governments have temporarily shut down internet access amid political crises and unrest. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
A group of scientists led by Johan Brox, an associate professor at the Australian National University, recently studied some fat molecules they had found on an ancient fossil. They say their studies provided evidence that allowed them to identify the fossil animal as a Dickinsonia and that it is the earliest known animal in the geological record. The scientists say the creature lived on Earth about 558 million years ago, which was about 20 million years before the so-called Cambrian explosion of modern animal life. Brox described this event as a time when complex animals and other life forms, like mollusks, worms, sponges, and arthropods, took over the fossil record. Brox and his colleagues described this primitive animal as being oval-shaped with rib-like structures along its body and measuring about 1.4 meters in length. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. In a phone call yesterday, U.S. President Donald Trump reinforced his strong support for efforts to restore democracy in Venezuela, according to the White House when he spoke with opposition leader Juan Guaido, who has proclaimed himself as the country's temporary president. More from VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman.
Word of the phone call came after Trump, who has recognized Guaido as the interim leader in Caracas, tweeted that Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro is willing to negotiate with representatives of the opposition to resolve that country's political crisis. Trump also warned Americans not to travel to Venezuela until further notice. The president's national security advisor, John Bolton, meanwhile, is cautioning business people not to deal in gold, oil, or other Venezuelan commodities, which he says are being stolen from the Venezuelan people by the Maduro mafia. Maduro is refusing to step down. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
Thank you, Steve. The UN Relief and Works Agency, known as UNWA, is appealing for $1.2 billion to provide humanitarian life-saving aid throughout the coming year for 5.4 million Palestinian refugees across the Middle East. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Millions of Palestinian refugees are scattered in encampments in the West Bank, East Jerusalem, Gaza, Jordan, Lebanon, and Syria. UNRWA provides them with myriad services, including education, health care, relief, and social services, as well as food, water, and other basic and emergency humanitarian assistance. In the wake of a decision last year by the Trump administration to cut the United States' $300 million contribution to UNRWA, the agency found itself in a critical financial situation. It was able to reduce the shortfall in 2018 due to help from other countries and institutions. The UNRWA Commissioner General, Pierre Kirchenbuhl, says he hopes donors will maintain the same level of contributions this year as Palestinian refugees continue to face a range of daunting human development and protection challenges.
Central to those challenges and pressures is the ongoing occupation in the Palestinian territory, the blockade of Gaza, and the levels of violence that we have experienced there with incursions, but also lack of freedom of movement. We have seen very limited employment opportunities, increased food insecurity, and in particular, the alarming deterioration of psychosocial conditions in these contexts.
Kirchenbuhl says one of the greatest concerns for Palestinian refugees is the lack of a political future. He tells VOA that young people in Gaza have little hope for what lies ahead. Another problem, he says, is that Israeli and Palestinian communities rarely interact with each other.
And if you grow up in Gaza, you don't meet Israelis, and frankly speaking, young Israelis very rarely meet Palestinians today. How this can be a contribution to future stability in the region is something that I just cannot see.
Kirchenbuhl warns the situation in the region remains extremely volatile. He says it is absolutely vital to preserve the key services in the difficult and polarized regions of the Middle East, and that, he says, will require sustained and generous funding from donors. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is International Edition. With the U.S. troop pullout from Syria, the French government suggests it may soon repatriate French jihadists held in the Middle Eastern nation. But the idea is deeply divisive at home. From Paris, Lisa Bryant has more for VOA.
Mais ce que je veux vous dire, Madame la députée, de façon très simple.
Speaking Tuesday to the French Parliament, Interior Minister Christophe Castaner said if any French jihadists are expelled from Syria, the government will know who they are and where they are located, and they would be arrested and tried the minute they set foot in France. The government has not officially confirmed media reports that as many as 130 French jihadists now held in Syria may be coming home in the near future. France was among Europe's top exporters of jihadists to Syria and Iraq. Many of the hundreds of French who fought with Islamic State and other extremist groups died in battle. Some returned, including several behind the Paris and Brussels terrorist attacks. But officials today estimate about 250 French continue fighting in Syria, according to news reports, and dozens are held in the north by Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces. Until now, France has done little to bring them home, but the void left by departing U.S. troops raises concern about their fate.
Ce sont des gens qui ont été nourris par la France. Nourris par l'école de la République, nourris à nos aides sociales.
Some French politicians are adamantly opposed to fighters returning home. That's the case of conservative lawmaker Guillaume Pelletier, who told RMC Radio that those who burned their French passports, committed war crimes, and possibly crimes against humanity have no place in France.
Ils sont détenus aujourd'hui par des groupes qui ont vocation.
But another leading conservative, Christian Estrosi, fears that groups now holding French radicals may be dissolved and the fighters risk going free. Experts warn that returning fighters and other radicals already here may present ticking time bombs, including those now in French prisons, some of whom may be released in just a few years. For VOA, I'm Lisa Bryant in Paris.
This is VOA's International Edition.
Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center at the National Defense University, talks with hosts Carol Castiel and Edward Rowima, Senior Editor in VOA's Central Africa Service, about current hot-button issues in Africa, including the disputed election results in the DRC and protests in Sudan and Zimbabwe. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA.
Today is World...
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcast. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Today is World Cancer Day, and January is Cervical Health Awareness Month. A shocking statistic reveals that every 2 hours, a woman dies from cervical cancer. Sports reporter and television host Erin Andrews was diagnosed with cervical cancer in 2016. Today, she is cancer-free and is now an advocate for cervical health. She shared her personal story with me, and she is also mobilizing women to take charge of their health. She urges all women to see a doctor regularly and get tested for cervical cancer, which is preventable. Her cancer was discovered during a routine doctor's visit.
I was just going to my OBGYN for my annual, and I didn't go because I had symptoms or I felt bad or I had any indication. I just went, like I said, to go get my checkup, and that's how I found out.
She stressed the importance of going to the doctor for regular checkups.
I learned from this experience that I was proud of myself for making sure I do go to the doctor on an annual basis. Actually, what I've learned from this whole thing is that women don't go to the doctor, which blows my mind.
Andrews says her personal experience and finding out that many women do not routinely get a medical checkup has motivated her to encourage women to go to the doctor.
Go to the doctor. Make some time out of your busy schedule to call your OBGYN and get in there and go get tested.
Andrews emphasized the importance of getting a regular checkup with an OBGYN because there are no symptoms in early-stage cervical cancer. Dr. Jessica Shepherd is an OBGYN and health expert. She explains some symptoms of cervical cancer.
When women come in and they have pretty much the type of cancer where maybe even radiation won't help at that point, some women come in with a foul-smelling discharge, they come in with very abnormal bleeding, or they come in with kind of pressure because the mass has actually grown so big that they can actually feel it. So that's what we never would want women to get to that stage, because that can be devastating. But the good thing that Erin has, you know, said over and over again is that cervical cancer is preventable and treatable. So what we want you to do is do exactly what she did, because that's why she's sitting with us here today, is because she went every year. She didn't have a sign or symptom. She went in for her annual like she always does, and that's when it was detected and it was able to be treated.
Dr. Shepherd pointed out that women in developing countries have more of a challenge in getting to the doctor on a routine basis. However, she says global health is very important to her, and there are ways to get vital health information.
Global health is one of my passions, and what we do know is that worldwide cervical cancer takes many more lives than it does here in the U.S. because we do have the PAP. But there are so many organizations such as Cure Cervical Cancer that actually go to these countries and actually train the people that are there to help them do PAPs in a way that is conducive to villages or areas where they don't have, you know, huge hospitals and doctor's offices, in order to help women detect any early stage cancers or abnormal cells.
Andrews points out that social media can play a role in helping women who don't have access to a doctor.
I think one of the great things is social media nowadays, for women to tune into what women are talking about their health on social media, but also websites. So changethestat.com actually is very helpful for women who may be a little anxious or afraid to make that first step and go to the doctor to find out more information about the Pap test, Pap plus HPV, but also starting the dialogue and the conversation with their friends and family as well.
Dr. Shepherd said it is important for women to get both the Pap and HPV test together.
So HPV, what we've learned now through science and research is that is the leading cause of cervical cancer. It's also known as the human papillomavirus. And that's what we're able to detect on the Pap and HPV testing. And so with that, if someone has been exposed to HPV, we can actually trace that and we can track that and make sure that it doesn't progress to cervical cancer. And if it's abnormal cells, we can treat it. If it's precancerous, we can treat it. And even if it's early stage cervical cancer, we can treat it. So Erin is a testament to that as well.
The HPV vaccine, a medical breakthrough, is helping young women and men to take charge of their health.
One of the things that I think is probably most important is HPV vaccine. So now we're having, you know, young women and young men can get it as well. So it's starting in the house, starting this conversation in the household, getting young teens to the doctor to get the HPV vaccine. Because like I said, it's very prevalent. I think pretty much everyone has it. So if we can kind of start a new generation where they're decreasing HPV exposure, then we're going to start to see decreased rates of not only cervical cancer, throat cancer. HPV is really attributed not only to cervical cancer, but many more cancers as well. So we're going to start to see decrease in cancer rates once we get more people getting our HPV vaccine.
Dr. Jessica Shepherd, an OBGYN in Chicago, Illinois. And that was also sports reporter and television host Erin Andrews on the importance of cervical health. Well, after spending close to 2 weeks at sea because no country would allow them to disembark, Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte said 47 migrants on the Dutch-flagged Sea Watch 3 finally would come off that vessel. Europe had been arguing over the fate of the migrants, and Italy agreed to let them disembark only after a half dozen countries came forward to take them in. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte ended the latest migrant standoff on Wednesday, announcing the 47 migrants would soon disembark. The migrants had been stuck on the vessel since their rescue off the coast of Libya, January 19th. The Sea-Watch 3 rescue vessel has been moored off southern Sicily since Friday. Europe has been struggling with how to deal with the migrants' respective arrivals since Italy's populist government, which came to power last March, announced it would close its ports to humanitarian vessels. It was the second time in a month the Sea-Watch 3 had been stranded at sea with rescued migrants and no safe port that would allow it to dock. Speaking in Milan on Wednesday, Prime Minister Conte said Luxembourg came forward as the latest country to answer Italy's request for assistance. The Prime Minister added that Luxembourg joined Germany, France, Portugal, Romania and Malta in agreeing to take some of the migrants from the Sea-Watch 3 ship operated by a German aid group. The migrants are expected to disembark in the coming hours. Deputy Prime Minister and Interior Minister Matteo Salvini said, "Mission accomplished. Once again, thanks to the commitment of the Italian government and the determination of our Interior Ministry, Europe has been forced to intervene and take on its responsibilities." Salvini added, "On the basis of the documentation gathered, an investigation should be opened to shed light on the conduct of the NGO." Stefan Seibert, spokesman for German Chancellor Angela Merkel, said Germany has agreed to accept some of the migrants, declaring it is clear a common and lasting solution is needed in Europe to the issue. The UN Refugee Agency says on average 6 people a day lost their lives attempting to reach Europe by way of the Mediterranean last year. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Thank you, Sabina. This is VOA's International Edition. Well, British banking giant Barclays has drawn up plans to shift more than $200 billion worth of assets from London to Dublin amid mounting business alarm that Britain is more likely now to leave the EU without an exit deal. With Prime Minister Theresa May's ruling Conservative government now backing away from a contentious withdrawal agreement negotiated in November and locked in a standoff with Brussels, Britain is heading for a scheduled March 29th departure without any kind of negotiated exit agreement. That means tariffs would have to be imposed on goods moving back and forth across the English Channel. It would also block market access to the EU for banks based in Britain. British and international firms with European headquarters in London have become increasingly angry with Brexit crisis. Earlier in January, in at times a testy conference call, 331 business leaders, including from U.S. banking giants and major companies like Amazon and Apple, were assured by senior government ministers that a no-deal exit would be taken off the table and that Britain wouldn't part company with its largest trading bloc until a deal had been struck. Since then, though, there has been no resolution to the major differences between Britain and the other 27 EU member states. If anything, frustrations have deepened without EU officials maintaining Monday that they are not prepared to reopen negotiations on the withdrawal agreement, which a deeply divided British House of Commons refused to endorse in January. Well, James Ingram, the Grammy-winning singer who launched multiple hits on the R&B and pop charts and earned two Oscar nominations for his songwriting, is dead. He was 66 years old when he died. Debbie Allen, an actress, choreographer, and frequent collaborator with Ingram, announced his death on Twitter on Tuesday. Ingram was born February 16, 1952, in Akron, Ohio. He appeared on Quincy Jones' 1981 album, The Dude, which earned him three Grammy nominations and one win for Best R&B Male Vocal Performance for 100 Ways. In a statement Tuesday, Jones called Ingram his baby brother. In 1983, Ingram released his debut album, It's Your Night, which included the hit Y'all Be There. The song, which featured Michael McDonald, became a top 20 hit on the Billboard pop charts and won the Grammy for Best R&B Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocal. Ingram also reached the top of the pop charts twice with the songs I Don't Have the Heart and Baby Come to Me, a duet with Patty Austin.
Keep you talking on the line, that's how it was. And all those walks together.
James Ingram, dead at the age of 66. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Xiaogun Chang. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Sports fans, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.